They're a loser franchise. Their head office is shit. Their coaches are shit. Or doing blow.
Welcome back to the Auctionable Offense Podcast. I'm your host for the night, Zach Bonner. You can find me on Twitter at BonnerFett with two Fs. Here as always with my guy, Charlie Parker. How's it going, Charlie?
My man, Zach. I'm doing good, buddy. How are you doing tonight?
Man, I can't complain at all. It's finally gotten nice out here in Indiana. We've had some beautiful weather the last few days. A little bit of rain today, but other than that, great temperatures. It's been really nice.
Right on. Yeah, we've had a little sunshine in Alberta as well, so it's been a welcome change.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's after 10 o'clock here my time, and I can see some light still peeking in through your windows there, so that's nice.
Yeah, I don't know why. The couple places I've been in the States are generally closer to the shoreline, California a couple times, Hawaii once and stuff, and I found it very interesting in those parts of the world how come 6:30, 7 o'clock kind of thing, it's dark. It's black dark. Here in the summertime, we're light till, we can be what you see kind of in my windows till 10, 10:30 at night. It's still like this. That's a great thing about this area.
Man, that's awesome. Definitely a little bit jealous of that. Yeah, I've already been out to mow my lawn twice already, so this weekend will probably be time number three. But, you know, such is one of the problems of having a home, but I catch up on all my pods when I'm out there doing that, so I kind of like mowing every once in a while.
Yeah, mowing, shoveling the snow, it's kind of a nice little quiet time. You put your earphones in and you get a chance to catch up. Now I've got a real short commute to work, so I've lost a lot of pod listening time. It sucks.
That's a bummer, man. A couple days a week I have a 45-minute commute. The rest of them, it's about 3 minutes from my house, so I catch up on some of my pods on those longer days, but you know, some of them, no pod listening at all, can't even get through like a single song on Pandora, so, you know, is what it is, but it's nice to live close to work sometimes.
Yeah, the commute's nice, but speaking of catching up, the word is that there's some news happening today. What's going on with that?
Oh man, yes, definitely some big news happening today. So, let's go through some of the smaller stuff here real quick first. Today the Jets cut Bryce Petty. I'm not surprised. I'm sure you're not surprised. Nobody should be surprised by this.
No, he shouldn't be on your roster. Never should have been.
Yeah, and the likelihood that he gets picked up by another team, I would put it maybe like 20% chance of happening. Maybe someone picks him up and tries to turn him into another developmental quarterback, but I don't see this having any impact on the NFL or fantasy really at all.
Nope. You can probably forget him as fast as you can forget his ex-teammate that you're going to mention next.
Yeah. Warrant issued for Robbie Anderson sometime in the last 24 or so hours, and then it was lifted. His attorney says it was due to a clerical error by the court. They didn't notify them of a hearing that they had. You said it before we started the show, but might as well say it again.
He gone.
Yeah, when there's smoke, there's fire, right? Whether he did some, this is all related to offenses that he has already allegedly committed. But man, he's one of those players that I don't know that he's quite good enough to make it through the shitstorm that he's creating.
No, he doesn't have a Josh Gordon. He's got Stephen Hill ability. He just doesn't have anywhere near the ability or the promise that a team would take on that kind of a head case. Not a chance.
Yeah, if the Jets do end up cutting him, it might be the end of the road for him. Dez Bryant's still unsigned. I am a little bit surprised by that. Reports recently said that there were 30 teams that were willing to sign him at the veteran minimum. I think that's probably a little bit of noise. But I am kind of surprised that he hasn't been picked up somewhere. So he might end up lasting until the end of camp. What do you think about that?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's in a position where he knows he doesn't have a lot of suitors but he'll have more once the needs start to arise. So come camps, come preseason games, when some injuries start happening, start seeing that some of these players are maybe behind on their rehab, some of that, a team's going to give him some money. There's lots of teams with a lot of money. All he wants, from my understanding, is a one-year prove-it deal. I heard he turned down $9 million from the Ravens, probably because he didn't think he'd be able to prove himself for more money. $9 million's nice, but he'd probably take a little less than that if he thought he could put up the stats that would garner him 11 or 12 for two or three more years.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that he's done, but he isn't the premier player he was before. I mean, admittedly, he's still one of the upper echelon receivers in the league, but he's not the tippy top like he was a few years ago. Next little piece of news, Breshad Perriman is reportedly owed a $650,000 roster bonus in late July. He's definitely a cut candidate. Where do you think he ends up if he does get cut, or is he just done?
Yeah, I don't think he's got much of a chance. He didn't show enough that a team would give him anything. He's got his injury concerns. He was already older coming in. There's no reason for a team to really throw any money at him. Maybe if they give him very, very little, he might, maybe he'll sign just because, but a team will only offer him a minimum and give him a chance to prove himself.
Yeah, my fear for him is if he gets cut, someone's going to pick him up, and I could see him maybe going through part of camp and being sort of like KD Cannon was last year and bouncing around to a few teams over the course of, 6 to 12 months, and unfortunately, I think he's likely to end up out of the league before too long. Next little piece, Eagles picked up the fifth-year option on Doug Peterson's deal. By my math, that keeps him through 2020. This isn't super significant for this year or next year for fantasy, but long-term, I think this is a huge move for the Eagles.
Yeah, it sets up consistency within the organization. You can see a trend within all winning teams is they've got consistency in the coaching and consistency in the front office. It's something I'm going to touch on a little bit later, but there's winning franchises and there's losing franchises. And part of being a winning franchise means you have very good continuity and consistency in your coaching and your front office for very extended periods of time.
Yep. Next little piece of info before we go into the big news for the day. Ricky Seals-Jones is expected to have an expanded role with the Cardinals. Are you surprised by that at all?
Nope. I love that news. That's great. It was good to see that they didn't address the tight end at all in the draft. That's a good sign. They'd never been a tight end heavy team in the past, but that was under Bruce Arians, who had shown that he wasn't really a tight end leaning coach. So there's a new coach in town, and hopefully what we're going to touch on later on the quarterbacks, it benefits Ricky Seals-Jones.
Yeah, and Ricky Seals-Jones can also operate out of the slot, like a lot of tight ends do, but he can do that in a little bit more of a traditional receiver role as well. So I think this is good news for him, and I think it's what most of us expected. You and I actually each have a copy of him in Pigs 3, so I'm really excited about this. And our last piece of news, a player who I have actually been shopping in Pigs 3, who I am probably not shopping anymore because of this solidification of his position with the team. Matt Ryan signed a 6-year, $169.25 million contract with at least $100 million guaranteed. So he's locked up through 2023. I love this move. I didn't think he was going anywhere, but this just kind of really, it just lets the rest of the league and fantasy players know exactly what the Falcons organization really does think of Matt Ryan. What do you think about this one, Charlie?
I think it's a nice move. There never really was any concern about Matt Ryan. That's been gone for years. You knew he was never going anywhere now, but it's a good sign to see that the organization is committed to keeping their core together. They've added in a few nice weapons. We're going to speak about that later. They've got good consistency. They've been working on their defense. I think they don't think they're done from making the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They think they're right in that window. And while they came up short that year, I think they really want to hold on to what they got and keep making a run in the NFC against arguably the strongest side of the league.
Yeah, and what they've done in the draft the last 2 years is they've solidified that defense, really added some pass rushers, some good talent across the board, and then they've also come back and added some playmakers to put around Matt Ryan, which is super important. This locks him up through either his age 37 or 38 season, I think. So we're looking at this could possibly be a career-ender contract on him. I'm sure at some point down the road they'll renegotiate some of the salary into bonuses or something. But essentially, this is potentially the last contract that he's ever going to really sign, or at least the last extension. So I'm a big fan of it.
For sure. It'll be the kind of deal where 3-4 years from now, when he's on his 35-36 season and they've got to re-sign Ridley or maybe re-sign a running back or something, Ryan will take the same kind of offers and bonuses that Brady's been taking every year for the last 3 or 4 years and taking some of that salary as a bonus or as this or that or whatever else to free up some money for the team so that they can keep signing weapons and keep the supporting cast strong around them.
Yeah, on some of those years when Ito Smith is his number one running back. Just kidding. Not overreacting to that pick. Like, I think some have. Speaking of the draft, though, so mainly what we want to do tonight is we're going to go over the auctionable offenses, consensus rankings for some of these rookies. One thing for me that I want everybody to keep in mind is I'm not a big tape watcher. I factor in a lot short-term value, easier time frames to project in, as well as if player X performs to such and such a level, how easy or difficult he will be to trade for higher value than I think he's actually worth. And also a lot of what I factor in is from people who I really trust in the community. The Beerfield Fantasy Football Podcast, I think those guys are really, really good and tremendously underrated as rankers and tape watchers. Also, the Orange Report by our guy, the FF Ghost, I factor in pretty heavily, as well as some of the other guys that we see on Twitter a lot. Matt Miller is one of those guys that I'm a big fan of. Matt Waldman. So that's what you're going to get a lot of my rankings from. Charlie, tell me and our listeners a little bit about your philosophy when it comes to ranking, drafting, basically setting up your boards like we have tonight.
So I touched on this in our first episode, but like you mentioned, I'm not a film watcher. I could watch film if I had more time. I'd watch more of it and stuff like that. But all the film in the world that I'm going to watch isn't really going to amount to a hill of beans because I don't have the eye to know what to look for. So I need to put my faith in analysts that I know have a good eye and have shown me a good track record over the year. So one of the things that I find to be a strength is discerning different pieces of information. You have worlds like Twitter or the different forum boards or Reddit or draft guides, magazines if you still read them. You have all these different pieces of information. Now, if you go to one source, you're going to get one set of rankings. If you go to three sources, you're going to get three. If you go to 25, you're going to get 25. Now, the idea is you take all these different pieces of information and you analyze them all as you're going through them and understand, okay, out of these 25 pieces of information I've gotten, the majority say this about a prospect. The majority say that about a prospect. And you start to take these things, take the strengths, take the people you trust and their word. And then from there, build your own board. You know, you've got a little bit of heart and soul in some of the picks. You've got some of the guys you really trust, some of the guys you really want to root for, some of the guys that you feel, all of those things. But that's what I feel is important. I don't claim to be an expert in any aspect of metrics, watching tape, or anything else. I appreciate the guys that want to get into that world and stuff. Nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. But I don't think they should then close themselves off just because they're doing their own thing now. They're just one set of eyes and they're maybe a new set of eyes. So good on them for branching out, but get all the information you can and then go from there. I would imagine, you know, some of the people, like you mentioned, FF Ghost, who I play in numerous leagues with, Nick Whalen does some great draft work, Matt Waldman, all those guys. I'm sure they have some own little variances in their own boards. I'm sure if somebody like Evan Silva says something in the world, all those guys take notice. They have faith in everything they do in their own processes. But if somebody that they respect says something, those guys still understand, hey, there might be something there. I'm going to take notice. So that's part of the fluidity. You're ever growing, ever learning, ever changing. And that's why I respect these draft processes and the draft guides and the guys that are willing to understand where they may have missed something one year and grow from it, learn from it. They don't just get in a box and pump out the same thing, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, Nick Whalen is another guy that I should mention, just like you did. He does the Debbie Report, really puts a ton of work into it. He's a guy who has coached at the collegiate level, really knowledgeable guy. Definitely check out his work if you haven't. He's another one of those guys that you somehow have stumbled upon this podcast. You have definitely heard of him, and if you haven't, check out his stuff. So let's get into some of these rankings. So what we've done is we have each individually ranked our top five quarterbacks and tight ends. We have also ranked our top 10 wide receivers and running backs. I think for the sake of the podcast and the fun of the listeners, let's go ahead and skip the most important position in real football and save that for last. That's the quarterback position. That is potentially the area where you and I are going to disagree the most. So let's start off with running back. I'll run through our top three right now, our consensus top three, and that is Saquon Barkley. We both have him ranked one. Ronald Jones, who we both have 30. And Darius Geis comes in at third. I have him ranked second. You have him ranked fifth. What's affecting your drop in him over where he was pre-draft?
Well, I like Geis as a player. I don't like anything about his landing spot. I'm not putting too much stock into the fact other guys got taken before him. That's not the end of the world to me. But I really don't like his landing spot. I don't like the fact that Gruden's come right out and said he's not going to be playing on third down. That's unfortunate. The only silver lining there is Chris Thompson's never stayed healthy his entire career. So he probably won't this year. But the fact that the coach came right out right away and said, this is what we're going to do, this is this, that's a little unfortunate for me. Second part to that is I do not see the Redskins being an overly high-scoring offense for a multitude of reasons. Like I said, I question their coaching. I like Alex Smith, but I think we're going to see a lot more of the old Alex Smith come back and a little less of the 2017 Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, Alex Smith. So I just don't think they're going to be scoring that many points, which hurts his goal line, which hurts his opportunity in the red zone. And I think that's where he kind of needs to eat. I don't necessarily see him breaking off the 60-yard chunk gains that some of these other guys might. He's going to get a lot of real nice bruising 15, 20-yard gains, I think. But, yeah, I'm a little disappointed in where he landed and kind of what I foresee the first couple of years of his career potentially being.
Yeah, I'll agree with you that Washington is probably not the most ideal landing spot for a running back this year. I would imagine you'd agree with me that Fat Rob and P. Ryan aren't going to cut into Geis's workload too much. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, I don't have any real fear of that. It's a little unfortunate for the few P. Ryan shares I had. I thought maybe...
Yeah, same for me.
He might kind of just sort of hang around if they didn't add anybody too high profile. He might get to assert himself a little more with another year, but I think he's just going to be buried and, you know, we'll maybe see him on a second team somewhere down the line.
Do you think Gruden's going to be creative enough and smart enough to put Geis and Thompson on the field at the same time? They are probably both in the top three for their playmakers this year, if you ask me, and probably deserve some time on the field together. Do you think they're going to be smart enough to do that?
It would be nice to see it happen. But I don't know where they're going to put everybody. They've got kind of a whole lot of
I'd like to see Chris Thompson used in the slot a little bit, maybe as a move player. I don't know that we're going to actually see that, but...
But then what do you do with Crowder? That's where Crowder's got to eat.
That's true.
I don't see Crowder playing on the outside. You're going to have Doxson on the outside. And who else do they have now? Do they have Pryor?
No, Pryor went to the Jets. That's a great question. I'm not super familiar with this depth chart. I just have
Doxson, Crowder, and I thought there was another maybe older big body guy for the other side or something.
Man, who the heck did they bring in? I'm pulling up their depth chart right now. This is awful. It's not good enough for me to even have committed to memory yet. So, Paul Richardson, that's right. They signed
Richardson,
him.
That's who they signed. Yeah. So he's going to be on the outside.
Honestly, they have a bunch of
guys
that are just
guy.
Like movers. Yeah.
So they've got a small speed guy. They've got a big catch radius guy. And then they've got Crowder for the slot. They've got Jordan Reed or the injury report of Jordan Reed. So
Vernon Davis is still there.
Vernon Davis will probably play mostly, you know, their starting tight end. So I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling about it. I think we're just going to see a lot of the Redskins we're used to where you're thinking, what the hell?
Yeah. And
probably the most we're going to think about the Redskins this year is thank God Kirk Cousins got out of there if you have him in the Superflex.
Yeah. This depth chart at receiver is going to be a mess, and it's going to be enough that they probably aren't actually going to try too much with Geis and Thompson on the field at the same time, which is a huge shame.
Well, their defense isn't very good either. So you can't foresee them having a whole lot of leads. So now does the game script end up hurting Geis as well? Like I said, I don't foresee Smith putting up big points. I think we're going to see a lot more of the Smith we're used to. I think last year was a bit of an anomaly for him.
Exactly. So I
don't see them putting up heavy points. I don't see them in favorable game scripts. I don't see Geis having the opportunity to kill out the clock in the end of many games.
Yeah, Alex Smith is going to go back to being everyone's favorite number two QB in two QB leagues, if you ask me. So let's move on to some of our other running backs. Actually, tied for third, we have Nick Chubb. And I'm the one low on him. You have him at two. I have him on five. To be honest, I really do love Chubb. The reason I have him at five is I just see the path to the field being a lot easier for the next guy we have on our list, as well as Ronald Jones. I don't feel like I'm down on Chubb, even though my ranking reflects that a little bit.
Go ahead. Here's my caveat for Chubb. My thing with Chubb is I think if you don't get him now, you're not going to.
That's a good point.
He's going to be that type where he's only going to go up for one reason or another. And hey, I don't like it either that he's now kind of sharing with Carlos Hyde and it's muddled for a while and it hurts Carlos Hyde, who's not a bad running back.
Duke Johnson's
decent,
there too.
Yeah, Carlos Hyde is a pretty decent three down running back. And Duke Johnson is a hell of a third down back. So that part I get. It's nothing ideal there. But if you believe in Nick Chubb, then you have to believe in the idea that he's recovered from his knee and it's only going to go up. So if you don't get him now, even if he's the type where he doesn't kind of break out or start showing till the second half of last season, all that hype is carried into the off season. You know what I mean? So you're riding that hype train and his price isn't going to be deflated. So barring an injury or something, I think he's the type of guy where he's only going to go up. And that being said, he's also going to be more highly drafted by the guys who covet him, who want him. So when you try to get him in a year from now, you're not going to be able to, because the guy you're trying to get him from just bought him at 102 to 104. I've seen him go 105, but to me, that's egregious. So you're not going to be able to get him. A guy's going to have seen that little bit of flash. He's going to know, okay, I think I got the right thing. I made the right move. And he's not going to move on from him. It'll be a lot similar to Derrick Henry. You know, guys that believed in him, they drafted him, and it seemed like, well, you're maybe paying a little early. But every year it was, you couldn't get him because his situation's gotten better and better and better. So his price has gone up and up and up.
Yeah, actually, you make really a convincing argument for Chubb. He's my rankings are always going to be fluid, and I'm not a huge ranker of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, whatever. I like to put players in tiers, and I always have players in tiers. But for now, I'm comfortable with Chubb at number 5. I think a big thing that's going to happen this year is the Browns are, I think they're going to be forced into riding the hot hand a fair amount. Whether Chubb or Hyde ends up as the starting back, I think we're going to see a lot of times where Hyde ends up, you know, with 18 carries in a game, and then, you know, another game, Chubb's going to have 22 and Hyde's going to have 6 or something crazy. And I think the big guy to be down on after this is actually Duke Johnson. I know he's going to continue to be the pass-catching back, but now there is another legitimate back there, along with Hyde, who can catch the ball and is going to command a certain amount of targets. I think if you have Duke Johnson shares and you can get, you know, a decent pick for him, maybe mid-second, I think it's a good time to sell him. Honestly, you could probably sell him and then reacquire him halfway through the season at a discount and just kind of take the net gain there. That's a risky way to play, but I'm a little down on Duke Johnson after this. Charlie, how do you feel about that situation?
Well, I do agree with you that I think Duke Johnson's taken a value hit, but it's not necessarily maybe in the way people think. I don't think his value hit so much comes from Carlos Hyde or Nick Chubb. I think his value hit comes from Jarvis Landry. It comes from Josh Gordon coming back. I mean, all Cleveland's done is really add weapons.
That's so true.
There's only going to be so many mouths, you know, so many balls to go around, and there's a lot of mouths to feed. So I think Duke Johnson actually took a bigger hit from Jarvis Landry because there's really no reason to split Duke out into the slot anymore. So That's true. Can still get creative with him on some packages for sure. But I don't see him having that kind of high floor that he had last year. He had a really good floor of touches, and I don't know if we're going to see that. That being said, I don't agree with selling him for a mid-second right now, mainly because after being through a couple rookie drafts already, I've seen what's there in the mid-second, and I'd still rather have Duke. Even if it's just because I think I can flip him at some point down the road for even slightly better. The mid-second, it just seems a little meh right now.
Yeah, I'll agree that the mid-second isn't super sexy. In Superflex and 2QB drafts, it's a little bit better. I think probably, if I'm going to throw an estimate out there, we're going to see a 20 to 40% reduction in Duke Johnson's fantasy points this year. That might be an aggressive reduction, but I'd rather play it safe. If I'm me, and I actually do have some Duke shares. Hopefully nobody in our leagues is listening to this episode before I send out some trade offers. Moving on, the last person that, if based on our composite, would fit into this tier with these other running backs here is Royce Freeman. We both have him ranked number 4. I think his path to the starting job is pretty laid out for him. I think he's going to fit that offense well, and basically, he's going to be able to do everything that they need him to. What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, exactly. I think he's in a great team situation all the way around. Denver's still got a really great defense. They just added Bradley Chubb to go with Von Miller. That's not a bad thing.
Oh, that's going to be nasty.
Exactly, right? So he's going to have some good game scripts. Case Keenum, while I'm not very high on him, I think he's better than anything they've had since probably 2015 Peyton. So that's not a bad thing. They've added some really nice other offensive weapons in the passing game, so they should be able to put up some points. I mean, Demarius and Cortland on the outside, while they're both in the similar vein, they still cover a lot of ground and have big catch radiuses. So there's going to be some decent opportunities for balls in the red zone. Royce Freeman's he's a nice back. He's got some wear on the tires. He had a really productive college career. But he's a good back. He's big. He's strong. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can pass protect well. He's going to be on the field. I don't see him having a hard time beating out Devonta Booker.
Yeah, actually, I agree with that. He is a really good flip candidate. Time to open beer number two for the pod. By the way, follow our account. I'll at Auction Pod. I'll do my best to tweet out the beers I'm drinking as we record. That's just the kind of guy I am. You know, all about sharing. All right, the next three running backs that we have, we're all really pretty close on rankings for. So those are Rashad Penny, that we both have him ranked at number 6, and then Sony Michel and Kerryon Johnson. You're at 8 on Michel and 7 on Johnson, and I'm vice versa. I think the big thing for me on Penny is that offensive line is absolute dookie, and he's going to be behind that for at least a couple years because you can't turn an offensive line around that quickly. What do you think about Penny, Charlie?
Yeah, exactly that. He's going to need to create from the moment he touches the ball, and he's going to see a lot of defenders in the backfield. That, coupled with the fact that he plays in the NFC West, so he's looking at the Rams twice, the 49ers twice, the Cardinals twice. Those are 6 tough games with a garbage offensive line. So, I mean, I like the kid. He's got a lot of talent, but he's going to have to create everything on his own. So I think he's going to show a lot of flash and make some big plays, and Russell Wilson will help him. But there's going to be a lot of abuse, too.
Yeah, I've seen some who have ranked Penny as high as number 2. I'd be interested to hear the arguments that they have for why he should be so high. I'm not on board with that, and I guess I would really just need to hear a good explanation for why that is. I do think he probably walks into a sizable workload, but if that workload is only going to be able to yield 3 yards a carry, you know, things like that, 3.2 is probably where he's going to end up, maybe as high as 3.4 yards a carry. That's still, even with volume, we're looking at a questionable season. We are both also really low on Michel compared to where a lot of guys have him. Charlie, what puts Michel at 7 for you? Excuse me, at 8 for you.
Well, there's 2 factors for that. One, since when do we like Patriots running backs?
Never.
Never. So why are we starting now? Which carries to my second point. 2 years ago, the Patriots were famous for being terrible at first-round draft picks. Hence why they were told they were geniuses when they traded their first-round draft pick for Brandon Cooks. Because everybody said, oh my gosh, Bill Belichick, he's so far ahead of the curve. He realizes they've got a deficiency when it comes to their drafting and their scouting, and they haven't been hitting on first-round draft picks. So now they're going to trade that pick and get something. He's a genius. Now this year they took 2 first-round draft picks. So are they better at it all of a sudden? Is that what makes these guys a lock? So Michelle's nice. He's got some game to him, absolutely. He's a good receiving back. But so are 3 other running backs in the Patriots arsenal. Rex Burkhead, they just gave some money to last year. So who's working between the tackles? Who's getting? It's going to be typical Patriots. Bill Belichick doesn't care about your fantasy team. It's going to be game script. So there's going to be games where Sony is probably going to put up great numbers. And there's other games where he'll have 3 or 4 touches. So that's what I see. I don't see the Patriots changing their stripes just because they spent a late first on a guy. They've wasted late first again. They'll get past it. So I'm not that interested in Michel. I'm happy to let somebody else take him, and hopefully that lets a guy like Freeman or Rojo get to me a little later on.
Yeah, I think the Michel pick is a good NFL pick, a good team pick, but I don't see it really being that great for fantasy. One of the big headaches that we always have with Patriots running backs is knowing who to start what week. Remember a few years ago with Jonas Gray, a 3-touchdown game, and then I believe the next game, or maybe it's 2 games later, he was inactive. This is just kind of the way Belichick does things. I've heard arguments that last year, our guy Deion Lewis was a top 12 running back, maybe top 18, somewhere in that range. There was a fair amount of variance to his game. Also, one person, I don't remember exactly who it was. It may have been Dwayne Brown. If it wasn't, I apologize for using your name. If it was, my argument against your argument is, so he said that a few years back, LeGarrette Blount was a top 12 running back. I think he finished 6 or 8 that year. And he scored 18 touchdowns that year, if I remember correctly. And that's awesome if that happens, but I don't really anticipate Michelle being able to do that. And if he does, that's a huge outlier, enormous outlier. And Michelle is going to get a good amount of carries. I think that's probably a fair estimate. But yeah, you said Burkhead. There's James White there. There's 2, 3, 4 other running backs on that roster. And while there's going to be days where Michelle just absolutely goes ape shit and puts up points for your fantasy team, I don't want to have to make those lineup decisions. In best ball, maybe I could bump them up to 5, but I don't know. Even in best ball, I like to kind of know what I'm getting. Kerryon Johnson, you have him at 7. I have him at 8. I don't have anything against the guy. The Lions traded up for him, but I think that backfield's a little bit crowded, and we're going to have to see how things shake out over this year to really be able to figure out if Johnson's going to be a fantasy producer or not. What do you think about Johnson?
I agree. The situation is less than ideal. If Johnson went to a better situation, he'd be a lot higher on my board, actually. If he went to a better situation, I could see him being right around Royce. He'd either be one above him or one below him, depending. If his situation was as good as Royce Freeman's, I'd arguably have him a spot ahead. I think he's another one of those situations where you're buying on the come. You're looking a little more at the future, maybe the second half of this year or towards next year, where you're going to see a return on that investment. If you're looking for the guy that is going to put up numbers this year, that's what you need. Maybe you're a contender, you're one RB2 away. I would look at another guy. I would probably look at Michelle if that was my team situation. I would probably look at Michelle over Johnson. If I thought I was one piece away, one running back two would set me up nicely, I'd go that way. And then again, I would be, if my plan didn't come to fruition, if I was dealt with an injury or some bad luck, I would be looking to flip Michelle. Honestly, get rid of him. He's not going to help your team, I don't see, in the future. So if you're not making the playoffs, you bought him for the playoffs, you're not going to make it, get rid of him and reload that piece next year. But Johnson, he's going to have to deal with Blount. Now, you mentioned Blount earlier. The funny thing about Blount is people say, well, he eats and this and that. Well, the reason he eats and he's been fantasy relevant is because he's played on 2 very high-scoring offenses for the last couple of years. Now, that's probably going to be the case in Detroit again this year. He should actually eat. He's going to get some work. Detroit's in the red zone a lot. So Blount is a good best ball target. He's good, real, real cheap, breaking case of glass emergency in Dynasty for this year. But going forward, I think they've invested in Kerryon. He's got a lot of talent. I think they're going to move on from Amir one way or another, whether it's a flat-out cut sometime this year or they try to kind of trade him.
Yeah, he's going to be cut. Yeah.
Yeah, Amir's gone, and that's good for Amir. He wasn't a fit there for one reason or another. He's a very talented back, maybe never meant to be a between-the-tackles 20-touch-a-game guy, but I certainly think he's a 15-touch-a-game guy. So another situation for Amir would be nice, and that just opens things up further on next year for Kerryon.
Yeah, I think you have a little bit more love for Amir than I do at this point, but I did really like him coming out of college. So our last 3 here, so it's a top 10, but we have 11 guys on the list. The one that we both have ranked is Nyheim Hines to the Colts, and then you have Kalen Ballage at 9. I had him unranked, and then I had John Kelly at 10, and you left him unranked. The story, I think, on these 3 guys, and actually, I would have had, Ballage probably at 11 if we went that far. So, I think he's right in where he needs to be. I think Hines is going to have an opportunity to get the ball in his hands with the Colts, and for running back, especially late, that's what I'm really looking for. Kelly, he's a talented player, and he's playing behind a good offensive line. All he really needs is an opportunity to get in there, And I think we know that that's going to have to take an injury for that to happen. But if we're looking at a handcuff, he's the kind of guy that you want to handcuff with. And Balazs, the Dolphins have a lot of questions at running back. So if you're going to take a stab, Balazs is a guy that I think is a good one to take a stab with. Charlie, what do you think of these three running backs right here?
Basically, much of the same. The reason I give Balazs a little more is because I think he's got some upside. He's got some potential. But he's arguably going to bust just as quickly as he's going to boom. So while I have him at number 9, that doesn't mean I'm reaching for him too high in drafts. If he's sitting there at the early second round versus a guy like, who might be there, Anthony Miller, something like that. If my team needed a running back, I would be interested in Balazs. Again, really for a flip potential. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a sustainable long-term asset by any means, but I don't think there's much in Miami. Drake's okay, but I don't think the team is that invested in him. I don't think he's the kind of player they feel they can give the whole workload to. So if Balazs can put some of his size and athleticism together, he could be a nice flip potential for you, where you drafted him as a early to mid second this year, and you're going to turn that into mid first next year, maybe a little better.
All right, so you're actually quite a bit higher on Balazs than I am. I think he's a potential guy for the third round, but I think actually as we get into some of these other positions, that'll probably clear up why we are where we are on some of these running backs. So let's go into the tight end position real quick. I'm going to go through the rankings, and then I know that you've got a little bit that you want to say about the position as a whole. 1 through 5. So I'm the only one who ranked these tight ends, and Charlie's got a really, really good reason why, and I actually agree with it quite a bit. So I've got 1 through 5 being Mike Gesicki, Dallas Goedert, Hayden Hurst, Mark Andrews, and Ian Thomas. So I am solidly on Gesicki as the number 1, and also solidly on Goddard at 2. Hurst, Andrews, and Thomas, pick your poison there. You should not probably be picking any of those three prior to the 4th round, and that is in a non-IDP league. If you're going with any of these guys in IDP and you're picking them before the 6th round, I question your draft strategy a little bit there. Charlie, tell me why this tight end class is totally, in your opinion, undraftable.
All right. You don't want any part of this tight end class. First off, you don't want to be drafting tight ends on the best of days. Tight ends, it's a much different transition. If you listen to the guys that put out the good information and know what they're talking about, tight ends has one of the biggest transitions from college to NFL. There's a lot for those young men to take in and start doing differently. So, tight ends generally don't transition quickly, and they don't turn into playmakers quickly. I know we have recency bias, and we see last year's class, but last year's class was a unicorn. That's not what we need to start expecting in the realm of fantasy football. Just because we've seen a trend in the last couple of years of receivers where it seems like, hey, you almost can't miss. A guy's turning into at least something, a wide receiver 3, if nothing else, even a guy you drafted in the 3rd round.
Yeah, well, and 2 of the 3 top guys last year didn't do anything, too.
Exactly. You know, the running backs have been lots of great things coming out. Lots of people were drafting David Johnson in the 2nd round of his drafts. Lots of people got Kamara and Hunt in the first, second turn, or real early second. Those guys are turning into huge bank right now. So you're seeing a transition in those ways. But tight end, you don't want to be investing in that. There's too much for those players to learn, and the talent that's coming in is not capable of that. Evan Engram last year was an uber-athletic prospect. I mean, he was breaking the mold levels. So it was expected what he was going to do. Then you look at the fact that his situation was helped a lot last year by OBJ being gone all season. Somebody was going to eat, and he was a benefactor of that. OJ Howard, you know, he he put up some numbers, but he's still blocking. He's still not that crazy offensive weapon that people want him to be. Brait just got paid there. They're keeping him around. He's still going to get his as well. So even on the best of years, you don't need to be going after tight end. Now, I can say that I learned this lesson the hard way. I'm one of the guys that bought into Ebron. It was younger in my dynasty career. There was lots of teams I needed a tight end. Most of my leagues are tight end premium. Now I'm going to digress for a minute. If you play in a league where it's tight end premium, if you can see my air quotes, because it's got 1.5 PPR, that's a fallacy. Okay? That does not put a premium on tight ends. So you need to stop thinking it does. People are getting trapped into overvaluing tight ends because of the extra half a point. Okay? Now, case in point, Cameron Brait had 48 receptions last year. Okay? That's 24 points. That's nothing. Big deal. You're paying. Cameron Brait was the tight end 9. And he had 48 receptions for 24 points on an extra 0.5 per PPR. That's not a premium. So don't get tricked into thinking you need to pay up for some tight end that you don't need. Hence why we were talking about Ricky Seals-Jones earlier. We don't pay for tight ends. Not very often. You either get a stud and you pay for them and you put the eggs in that basket, or you should be streaming tight ends. So now, back to this class. This class doesn't really have some uber talents. I can get why Zach likes Gesicki, because he's got a great opportunity. So opportunity is a great equalizer to maybe not being uber talented or having the greatest draft capital. He should be on the field, so hopefully he can make some plays. But overall, the talent isn't that great. They're just a mediocre crop, but they're the only ones there. So they seem better than they really are. If you looked at them, if you compared them against the top prospects from a couple of the last years, they wouldn't stack up very well. So let somebody else this year draft a tight end. Don't waste your equity on a tight end. If Gesicki was there in the third round, sure, no problem. But he's not going to be. Somebody's going to take him much, much earlier than that. So the tight ends are going to be gone, and that's just fine. Let that drop some other players to you.
Yeah, I really do agree with you about the tight end position. And just real quickly, since you brought up some stats, Evan Engram, as a rookie, one of the best rookie tight end seasons that we've seen. 64 receptions. This is over 15 games. 64 receptions for 722 yards and 6 touchdowns. The number 2 and number 3 rookie tight ends are O.J. Howard with 26 catches for 432 yards and 6 touchdowns, and David Njoku, 32, 386, and 4. And if you're curious about what that does for fantasy production, that puts Evan Engram at tight end 4, which is a full, very large tier break below the top 3. And then it puts Njoku and Howard is at 18, and Njoku is at 24. So if you're looking for rookie production at the tight end position, you shouldn't be. It's not going to happen. Now, Gesicki is possibly going to be an outlier on that, because the Dolphins have absolutely nothing at the tight end position. However, they also have absolutely nothing as just an offense overall. Kenyon Drake should do a little bit on the ground, and that's really all you can kind of project. Ryan Tannehill.
The Dolphins are going to be absolutely horrible this year.
Yeah.
Like, I feel bad for all my Tannehill shares. I'm glad the team seems to be showing some confidence in them and all that. But the Dolphins just have nothing. They're one of those loser franchises. I'm sorry, bud. I know they're your team, and I'm not.
Hey, it's a loser franchise. It is.
They're a loser franchise. Their head office is shit. Their coaches are shit or doing blow. You know, that just, there's no good leadership. You know, I mean, we often forget these are oftentimes, you know, 20 to 23 year old men walking into their first job. You remember what it was like when you walked into your first job? You're nervous, and maybe you you're kind of act cocky because that's what you do to sort of as a defense mechanism, or maybe you're lazy and somebody had to kind of give you a kick in the ass and say, hey, you got to work harder here. This isn't college anymore. All those things. And that takes leadership. That takes strong skills up at the top. That takes a management that understands that we have to put money into other areas, not just flash or not just this. They have good structure within their organization all the way around. All the little side things you see on the back end that people don't really understand or are privy to, you know that they're there with organizations like the Patriots, the Packers, what would you put as another really, the Eagles. Those are strong organizations where you know they're doing a lot in the community. They have a really good presence. All those things. It's just, I don't want to use the word family, but it's more than a business.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the Dolphins are a very fucked organization right now. And while Gesicki is going to have a lot of opportunity, I think, if you're not buying in on him, then just completely pass on the tight end position this year. Goddard had a good opportunity, and then he ended up with the Eagles. If you're drafting him, it needs to be probably third round or later, and with the understanding that he is not doing anything for the first few years. Let's go ahead and move into the quarterback position. This one is a total mess if you're looking at our rankings against one another. So instead of going with tiers or groups of players, let's go one by one. I'm going to go ahead and give Lamar Jackson our de facto number one because he's tied with another player. However, we both have Jackson as our quarterback two. I think that's pretty different from a lot of other people. So, Charlie, what puts Jackson at number two in your opinion?
I really like him. I think he was, for some reason, the recipient of a lot of hate. I don't know what exactly it was, but people just didn't want to like him, it seemed to me. He put up great numbers. He won a Heisman. He showed really great skills, truly. He didn't just run around and fling the ball. If you listen to what Matt Waldman said about him and how Matt Waldman breaks down his game, Matt Waldman actually calls him the best pocket passer in this class. He's also the guy with the best legs in this class. He's uber talented. And I think the reason I have him so high is while I'm not a big fan of Baltimore's offensive schemes, I do feel they're a fairly strong organization. Sometimes that's to a fault. Ray Rice. And I mean how they handled the situation, how they handled Ray Rice. I don't mean what Ray Rice did. I mean kind of the whole back and forth. That turned messy. That turned ugly. And I hope that's not indicative of who that organization is, because I think they're stronger. Even if Ozzie leaves, I think they've got sort of people that have learned through that system. So I hope the organization is what I feel it is. So while I don't think they're uber talented in the personnel department, they're kind of a quagmire right now. They're not always the most creative offense in the world. I don't think he has to start right away. And I still believe that's a good thing for quarterbacks. I'm not looking to invest in quarterbacks because I need one right now. That's not a good recipe, and I understand that. With quarterbacks, you want to be thinking a year ahead. And that's a big factor for my one and two. So I have Jackson number two because I know he's going to be sitting at least a year, because Flacco's still owed big money. He's getting paid his last year of big money this year, I believe. So barring an injury, I mean, they're playing Flacco. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You're not benching him right now. That team is not going to win a playoff game. So there's no reason to bench him. So I think it's great that Jackson has the opportunity to sit behind a good coach. I mean, like Harbaugh or not, I don't think you can call him a bad coach. So he's got that opportunity to sit, watch the game, learn the game, develop some of those rapports and skills and practice. And I think there's a bright future for that young man.
I really agree. I have two really big reasons for why Lamar Jackson's my number two quarterback. Number one, if you did not see what he had to say when interviewed by Deion Sanders immediately after being picked. You need to go and find that online. It was incredible. So it was a huge mix of humility for falling as far as he did and for what so many people said about him in the draft process. And combined with that was the absolute confidence that he had in himself as a player and also what he could do with the franchise that drafted him. It was awesome. In a world where everybody is so consumed by everyone's swag and everyone's bravado, it was nice to see a kid. I say kid, I mean, he's 22 years old.
They are kids.
Yeah, I mean, we're in our 30s, you know, a young guy in comparison to you and I. It was awesome to see him have some humility, but also the confidence in him and the determination to be a good player. And then on top of that, I'm just going to read just a short little excerpt from the Orange Report from the FF Ghosts. This is what he has to say about Lamar Jackson. Jackson is an elite threat at quarterback and will be one of the most difficult players to contain in recent memory. Now that is one sentence out of a full page about this player. And I absolutely agree. You are not going to contain Jackson with a standard pass rush. You know, the Broncos might be able to contain him because they have a ton of pass rushers. The Jacksonville Jaguars as well. But over the next few years, I believe that we're going to see Lamar Jackson, I don't want to say redefine the position, but change what we think of as a standard quarterback in the league. He has the legs and he has an absolute cannon of an arm. If he is able to refine his skills, he is going to be the steal of this first round. These other four quarterbacks who went ahead of him are going to be afterthoughts in comparison. I am all in on Lamar Jackson. He's my number two quarterback, and that's because I am a little bit safe. There's one other guy that I think is a little bit safer than him. But if I have a team that is an absolute dumpster fire and I am trying to get back on top, better believe I'm going after Lamar Jackson if I need a quarterback.
Yeah, and I think Lamar Jackson had a good thing going for him in that his best line to success, in my opinion, was the non-rushed, was to sit behind somebody. Now, the great thing that he had going for him was he was ranked as most people's fourth or fifth quarterback. You know, all the draft picks, all the Pete Priscos, Mike Mayocks, all those guys, they all had him as generally the fourth or fifth. So that was a benefit for him, meaning he wasn't really going to go in the top 15. There was some craziness that kind of came up when four quarterbacks got drafted and, you know, maybe he would get in the top 15 and stuff like that. But it was always looking like he was going to be a late first, maybe early mid-second kind of guy, which opened up some great opportunities. I mean, that basically meant half the league he could have went to and they would have been good landing spots. San Diego, Pittsburgh, New Orleans,
Miami,
New England, Miami. You could have let Tannehill for another year or two, right? There's just so many places he could go to that had a safe person in front of him, but a good path in the not too distant future. Cincinnati. You don't think they could walk away from Dalton? They've been talking about it forever.
They could prance away from Dalton.
Exactly. So, I mean, Lamar Jackson really had a great opportunity of having more potential places to go for success, arguably, than places he would bust. So one interesting thing about Baltimore, now I don't know anything about it, I haven't looked into it yet, but I would guess once they lose Flacco next year and his contract is off the books, they should become a fairly big player in the free agency market next year. If they're one of those teams, they could make somewhat of the Chicago transition where they've got their quarterback now and all of a sudden they make a splash in free agency next year, draft a wide receiver or some kind of weapon in the first round next year, and that team's on the way to turning back around. they could be kind of interesting in a year or two. They seem like a dumpster. Well, they are a dumpster fire now, and they have no legitimate weapons, no running back, no wide receiver one, no tight end. I mean, they really do not have anything. But I think they're going to have some capital next year, and if they can acquire some draft equity, like a early pick, you know, maybe N'Keal Harry wouldn't look so bad there with the 106 pick next year.
Yeah, actually, as you were talking, I pulled up on SpotTrack.com. If you were a contract or cap kind of guy or gal, you should check it out. I pulled up Joe Flacco's contract, and so it is 2018. So if he were to be cut this year, which we all know it's not happening, that would actually add $4 million to his cap hit. Next year, he has a cap hit of $26.5 million. If he's cut, his dead cap is $16 million, so that's going to save $10.5 million. I think there's a solid chance we see him cut next year. In 2020, he ends up saving $20.25 million against the cap. So I would say almost definitely we see him gone by 2020. And with the devaluation of the quarterback position in fantasy football.
Or he's going to get traded to the Browns when Mayfield doesn't pan out.
That's not happening, dude. That's not happening. That's the next player we're talking about, man. That's not going to happen, but it could happen. It really could. either way, I think we're going to see Flacco gone next year, likely 2020. If you got a paycheck that you can put on the line, go ahead and bet that, because 2020 Flacco is gone for sure, if not next year. So Lamar Jackson's going to have an opportunity to start. I think it's obvious that you and I are both really high on Jackson. The next guy is divisive for us. The next three kind of fit into the same tier, but because of the separation that we have on this third guy, let's kind of separate him into his own. And that is Josh Rosen. You have him as your one. I have him at five. I know why I have him as low as I do. I want to know why you have him as your quarterback one. Change my mind.
Basically for all the same reasons as Jackson, except his situation is better, and he's a little more of a pure NFL passing quarterback, ready to go kind of a guy. He's your quintessential, you know, big white boy, face of the organization, smile with the kids, kiss babies, smack asses, all that kind of thing. He's got a good team. Now, we're going to touch on some of this later, but Kirk was an amazing, not amazing, but it was a great pickup for the team. Now, much the same as Lamar Jackson for me, Rosen is a future buy. Like I said, it doesn't matter who the guy is. I don't buy quarterbacks for this year. That's bad news bears. It's a recipe for disaster. So Rosen is the exact same thing in that he's not going to start right away. And that's good. That's a good thing for him. He doesn't need to. There's no pressure. Arizona was basically gifted him being able to trade up for cheap to the 10th spot and get Rosen. That was a gift they weren't expecting. So they're happy to play Bradford for till he gets hurt, whenever that's going to be. They paid him some money and not rush Rosen. They have zero reason to rush Rosen. So that's a great thing for him. So I think the talent that he has to be an actual NFL-ready quarterback, mixed with the fact he's not going to be rushed in there, is a great thing for him. That being said, he, like Jackson, is on a team with some questionable weapons. He's got better weapons. He's got David Johnson. He's got Christian Kirk coming in. And he's got Larry Fitzgerald. Now, he probably won't get a lot of Larry Fitzgerald. But hopefully Larry Fitzgerald, the year he spends here with Christian Kirk, will be a good thing going forward. So, Ricky Seals-Jones, who we mentioned too, that's a guy we like, right? Quarterback's best friend is a young tight end. Well, any tight end. But if they got one they're starting now, they could build a rapport going forward for the future as well. So I like Rosen for the reason I like all quarterbacks. It's for the future. It's for the prospect of what's to come. A lot of times you'll make great value on a quarterback by drafting him in the second or third round, thinking you're Goffs, Wentz, Dax, and now you trade him a year later for, to the people that want to pay for a quarterback, for a late first, early second, something like that. So that's why I like Rosen. I think he's got the same pros as Jackson, a little different skill set, but the same kind of pros, but he's got a little less cons.
All right, so the reason that I have Rosen at 5 instead of higher, and I understand he was expected to be the best pro-ready quarterback coming into the league. He has shown a lot of talent on the field. The biggest thing, and this is one of those things that it really is my gut, and 100% I understand if you don't buy into it, and if you don't, that's totally cool. I am perfectly comfortable being wrong. Based on some of the interviews that he did immediately after being drafted and over the next day or two, I think he's going to have a hard time coming into the league and not being the guy. And I think it's going to fuck with him mentally. He's, to my knowledge, never been not the guy for a team. And to come in and be behind Sam Bradford and to have three other quarterbacks be drafted against him, I get the feeling, based on what I've seen come out of his mouth, that kind of fucked him up. And while I have no ill will towards the kid at all, I want him to do well, I moved him down a little bit on my board, and I feel more comfortable with the other players than I do with him. And I really do hope I'm wrong, and I'll be happy to say that I'm wrong if I am. It's hard for me. If I have to draft a quarterback, I want these other four guys instead of him. Now, if I don't need a quarterback and he falls to me, I'm going to be really happy with it because he is a pro-ready quarterback. He has a really good skill set. And when Sam Bradford inevitably gets hurt, you know, he's put up one 16-game season over the last 5 or 6, I think. He's going to step in, and he has a lot of good players around him. He has one of the, probably a top three running back in the league behind him. So he has a lot of pieces around him. So I think he could do really well, but I have a lot of concerns about his mental game. And that is all said knowing full well that I've never been in the same room as him, I've never talked to him, and it could really just be that there are a few instances where he came across a little differently than he meant to. So that's why I have him at 5 and Charlie has him at 1. I do think it makes sense for him to be in the middle for our combined rankings.
Now, I get what you're saying, but one thing I'll add, and this is just for the listeners, this gives a little piece into how my mind works and how I'm always looking at more than the numbers behind the game. I'm looking at the human dynamics and things like that. Things like players getting suspended. When is it time to move on? Like, when is a Robbie Anderson just done and like stop spending equity on somebody like that? And when should you be buying Josh Gordon types? Things like that. Why should you be buying Le'Veon Bell right now, a guy that's got all these concerns? Things like that. So one thing is, Josh Rosen's sitting, he's a number one first round draft pick. He's the number one, number 10 pick. But he's still sitting behind a 101 pick. A guy that just got paid. A guy that while he's bounced around the league, he keeps getting paid. Teams keep paying for him. So it's still his job. He's still going to be the crazy-eyed, googly, meme-eyed Sam Bradford walking in the room and taking that job. So that's a difference where if, and this is what I'm going to touch on with my Mayfield concerns, is if a guy like Josh Rosen had stepped into either of Cleveland or the Jets, where he did have the cameras right in his face, where he was starting right from day one, where he did have that big expectation, I think it would change things. But not having that makes a big difference for a guy like that. He's not walking in as the 101. He's walking in as the 110. Team traded up for him. They wanted him. That's fine. But he's still got to fight for that spot against a guy that's already made $100 million, was a 101 pick. Three different teams have paid to get. So I think that changes the dynamic a little bit.
Okay, so it sounds to me like your argument is all of the sting that he took from falling in the draft should, by the time he gets on the field, kind of be ancient history for him. Is that sort of what I'm hearing?
Well, a little less that, and because he didn't really fall. I mean, he fell a little bit, but a little more like he's going to get a bit of a maturity wake-up call. Because he's not walking into the locker room with his chest puffed out and the starting job is his. It may be his by week one or week four, but he's still going to have to kind of earn it. There's a guy there in-house that was paid. This isn't a Mike Glennon, Mitchell Trubisky situation. This is a little different. This is a guy that was a 101 pick. He's been paid by teams. This team just went and paid for him. Rosen wasn't expected by Arizona. He was a gift. He wasn't supposed to be there. Arizona had no plans for Rosen. When they saw they could get him, they made the move and they got him because it made them sense for their team. But he was not part of their plan and direction, I believe, 3 months ago when they signed Bradford.
Yeah, fair points. I still have some reservations about Rosen. However, I don't hate the guy. The last two that we have for our quarterback rankings, you have 4 and 5 and I have 3 and 4, and that's Sam Darnold and Josh Allen. Darnold, I think it's pretty obvious why we have him where we do. He should be a very solid NFL quarterback, if not exceptional in any way. He's also with the Jets, so good luck with that situation. Allen, I totally understand why you have him at 5. The reason why I have him at 4 is I would rather bank on that huge arm and be willing to have him bust than go ahead and just ignore it completely.
But a huge arm that's going to throw to what? To whom?
Really, really good question. Yeah.
That's my thing. That's why
they have nobody.
That's one of my issues with Allen. The kid's set up to fail for more reasons than I can count. The team traded up for him. They spent too much for him. He's got no weapons. He has little chance to succeed. And he plays on one of those loser franchises. So I feel bad for the kid because there's going to be too much placed on his shoulders and it's unrealistic.
He's going to be expected to start early and, or actually probably from day one. And that's going to be tough.
And the best offensive weapon on the team is LeSean McCoy.
Yeah.
A 30-year-old running back with huge touches. They've got no pass catchers. So who are they going to throw to? I mean, if they still had Chris Hogan and Sammy Watkins, maybe. Maybe I'd be excited. That wouldn't be so bad. But you've got Kelvin Benjamin, or both of Kelvin Benjamins. I don't know what he weighs these days, but the team doesn't seem that thrilled with him. Your two best offensive weapons are LeSean McCoy and Charles Clay. You know, streaming tight ends represent right there. Who's he going to throw to? Where's this big arm going to go? He's a year early, honestly, because he's one of those situations where you switch him into one of these sitting roles, you know, put him behind Flacco. Wouldn't that make a lot of sense?
Yeah.
They're the same guy. They're real dumb. They can stand in the pocket and they can throw for a mile. So it'd be an easy transition for the whole team, right? But he's going to have to start day one because what are they going to do? Play Nathan Peterman? No. So he's going to have to start day one and he's set up to fail. So that's just, I feel bad for the kid. It's bad news. Somebody like that would really benefit from the time. And that much, it's basically the same thing with Darnold. He's got some talent. He's got a lot of talent, but he's uber young. He made a ton of mistakes in college that aren't going to get any easier in the pros. And now he's going to be starting day one because he's drafted to be the face of the franchise. So what are you going to do? You're going to draft a guy number three and then have Teddy Bridgewater beat him out? Start Josh McCown? I mean, they should start Josh McCown or Teddy if he's better, but they won't because that's not what you do in New York and not when you spend a 103 pick. So again, I don't see the path to success being very good. He's got limited weapons. The Jets have a decent offensive line, it's decent enough. It's not great. It's not terrible. Their defense isn't bad, but still, there's not a good recipe for success for the young man. They're setting these kids up for failure, just like Matt Waldman, Sigmund Bloom, these guys talk about. A lot of very smart guys when it comes to quarterback, they say it's 9 times out of 10, you're going to break them before you build them.
Yep. Yeah, so the quarterback position, I think, overall is just not super great this year. We both really do like Jackson, but in general, in two QB leagues, I think you're going to see at least three go in the first round. But it's not for five QBs going in the first round. It's pretty not sexy.
All right, folks, and at this point, we are going to cut this episode short. Part two will be uploaded in just a few days, so be on the lookout for that, and thanks for spending some time with us.